I am Camille Johnson, and this is Finding the Floor. Stories and reflections of midlife motherhood, family, and finding meaning in it all. Join me as I share a little piece of my life and figure out what I want to be when I grow up. Hey friends, welcome to Finding the Floor. This is episode 179, and today is another episode where I'm going to be talking about the book, The Anatomy of Peace. This is part 3, and I'm calling this Self-Betrayal and Justification. That's what we're going to understand. So this part of the book is technically, if this is kind of confusing with the way I'm naming the podcast, but this is like part 2 of the book, From Peace to War, and I'm doing the first 4 chapters, chapters 8 through 11. And here we're going to understand how we get from a heart at peace to a heart at war. I just really find this book interesting, and it's very good to be like self-reflective on how this works. Even though this is sort of like a fictional story and maybe some of the characters might feel a little two-dimensional, even though they do have some depth, I do feel like you really do get a sense of how you can use this in your real life. So we left off last time. They had to take a break to go to lunch, and they were trying to understand what it really means to have a heart at war or a heart at peace. Okay, that's what they had learned. And to see people as people rather than objects. So it's interesting, in chapter 8, Lou tries something to use the things he's learned to make amends at some things that happened at work. And I'm not going to get into all those things that happened at work, but suffice it to say, he tries and he begins to see kind of where he saw them more as obstacles or being obstinate and therefore more of an object. And then he tries to make phone calls. But as he gets into it, then he ends up yelling at the person who doesn't really want to talk to him anyway because he's mad. So then Lou kind of feels discouraged and he just wants to leave so he can figure out his problems and deal with them at work. But it's interesting that Carol really feels like this is important and doesn't want to leave and threatens that if he leaves that she will like leave him and get a divorce. So he decides to stay and learn more. And then we get into this really interesting part of understanding how our hearts can go from peace to war, to go from seeing people as people and then seeing them as objects, or how they become obstacles. You know, I just think it's so fascinating because you really don't sometimes think you're actually thinking about your family members or your kids as objects. But I've definitely thought of my kids as obstinate or giving me a hard time or just getting in my way, or why they have to make things so hard and not like what's going on with them. So it's really kind of fascinating. So in chapter 9, they begin with a little bit of a philosophical explanation of how this idea of I see people as people or I see people as objects began. They begin with the French philosopher René Descartes, and his foundational assumption was the famous line, I think, therefore I am. So in their explanation, they're trying to say what Descartes called I, how does he even know that? How does he know he is an I? So then another philosopher, Martin Heidegger, question Descartes with that same thought, like, from where did you acquire the language that enables you to formulate the thought, I think, therefore I am? So then he says, really the foundational belief is the fact of being in the world with others. And this is, Yusuf is explaining this, and he's saying, Descartes was able to postulate that separate self because he acquired language in a world with others. And so one of the parents, the English woman named Elizabeth, she says, ah, so being in a world with others, not the idea of a separate self, is what is fundamental. So instead of I think, therefore I am, it's more like I am in a world with others. And therefore, I'm able to say something like I think, therefore I am. Okay, so then he introduces another philosopher named Martin Buber. And he agreed with Heidegger in that we are in a world with others. That is the most fundamental human experience. And then he observed that there are two ways of being in the world. We can either be in the world seeing others as people, or we can be in the world seeing others as objects. So he called the first way of being the I-thou way, and the second way of being the I-it way. And then he argued that we are always in every moment being either an I-thou or an I-it, seeing others as people or seeing others as objects. But this philosopher never, like, then began to question, like, how we move from one way to the other. And that is what the next chapter is going to talk about. And it's really interesting how the way they write this with a story from Yusuf's life to help us understand how we go from a heart of peace, seeing people as people like ourselves, or a heart of war, seeing people as objects. So in chapter 10, the title is Choosing War. So just think about that as we go into this story and this idea. So Yusuf goes and tells of the story of when his father was killed in the 1948 Arab-Jewish War. And after that, after moving around a bit in Jordan, they finally moved back to Israel and settled in the town of Bethlehem. Now, obviously, to all of us who are Christian, Bethlehem is the birthplace of Jesus Christ. And so they would rely on a lot of tourism to help make ends meet. People coming to, you know, see the city of Bethlehem. And when he was 8, he kind of got a job as the street hustler to bring different tourists to the different shops to help them come buy stuff at different shops. So when he was 8, he also noticed on this same street that he would kind of hustle and help get people to go to different shops, there was a blind Jewish man named Mordecai, and he was appealing to the same people as, you know, as they were passing by, as they would give coins to Mordecai. So he says this, one day Mordecai stumbled as he asked a passerby for help. His purse burst open as it hit the ground and his coins flew in all the directions into the street. And it's interesting that Yusuf says, what happened right then is I had a desire to help him, first to help him to his feet, and then to retrieve his coins for him. Now, I just think it's really interesting that he had an idea or a desire to help him. And so he then asked a group, so what do you think I did? And many of them said, well, I think you helped him. And then Lou pointed out, he's like, I don't think you helped him, otherwise you wouldn't be telling this story. And what Yusuf said, well, that's true, I didn't help him. I just turned and left and walked away. And what he called that was this betrayal of this initial desire as a self-betrayal. It's written in the book, a stronger way to say it is that I betrayed that sense and acted contrary to what I knew was right in that moment. Instead of helping, I turned and walked the other way. Okay, so then he asked the group kind of for a discussion. As I was walking away, what sort of things do you suppose I might have started to say and think to myself about Mordecai So there's kind of a big discussion with a lot of different things, and they come up with a couple different ideas of like, he has no right to be there. He robs me of my peace because of his Jewish people. He's a Zionist threat and a bigot. So those were some of the thoughts that maybe they're thinking that young Yusuf was thinking. So then Yusuf asks, well, what are things I might have, let's say, thought or might have seen of myself? Like, how am I seeing myself as I'm walking away? And then the discussion brought up ideas like, as a victim, you're better than he was. And then Carol points out, well, you might have gotten down on yourself for not being a good person. And then the character Pettis had a really insightful thought. He said, by turning away quickly, you needed to be seen as a good person. Otherwise, you would have just sat and watched him try to fumble around and gather his coins. By turning away, Yusuf preserved his reputation. He didn't want to see it. He just like walked away. So it's interesting, the need to be seen well. And then Yusuf even shares a story from how this morning he dropped a piece of lettuce and instead of just picking it up, he just kicked it under the counter. He wanted to be seen as a tidy, responsible person rather than just being one. So all of those things are quite interesting. Okay, so first he asks, you know, how did I see Mordecai? How did I see myself after this whole situation? And then how did I view my circumstances? And again, a big discussion comment suggests as unfair, unjust, burdensome, the whole world lined up against you and your well-being, and you maybe even felt angry, depressed, or bitter. So then Yusuf asked, well, why, as I walked away, would I say I was feeling this way? What might I have said to myself? And they, again, come up with the discussion like, well, it wasn't your fault. It's the Israeli fault, what they'd done to your people. So he felt justified in his anger, in his judgment, and in his judgment of Mordecai. And so then he says, so summing it all up, I didn't do anything wrong and that others were to blame, that I wasn't responsible for what I was seeing and feeling. And then he asks the question, and was all this true? And then he says to them, no, it wasn't true. He says, I'm suggesting I was making a choice that resulted in my feeling angry, depressed, and bitter, a choice that was my choice and no one else's choice, not Mordecai's and not the Israelis. So then in the book, you have this diagram called the choice diagram. So it has like, first, the circumstance like helped Mordecai gather his cones, had this sense and desire to help him. And when he honors the sense, let's say there's like a line and you have a choice. You can honor the sense or you can betray the sense. So we're just kind of going over in this diagram, it sort of goes over what all the things they went through. Like he had this sense and desire to help Mordecai to gather his coins. And he had a choice to honor the sense or betray the sense. And because he betrayed the sense, there's this square with four squares inside. He says, the view of myself I had was better than a victim, bad, but made to be and need to be seen well. His view of Mordecai was that he had no right to be there, robbed me of peace, Zionist threat, and a bigot. His feelings were angry, depressed, bitter, and justified, and his view of the world was unfair, unjust, burdensome, and against me. So then he says, when I choose to act contrary to my own sense of what is appropriate, I commit what we at Camp Moriah call an act of self-betrayal. It is a betrayal of my own sense of the right way to act in a given moment in time. Not someone else's sense or standard, but what I myself feel is right in the moment. Then he says, like, acts like this become so common. And then he goes on to point out, a choice to betray myself is a choice to go to war. Okay, so then we're going to go on to the next chapter, chapter 11, how it says, how does that happen? How is a choice to betray myself, therefore, a choice to go to war? Yusuf answers that question. He says, when I betray myself, I create within myself a new need that causes me to see others accusingly, a need that causes me to care about something other than the truth and solutions, and a need that invites others to do the same in response. So then he asks them the question, and kind of you can think about this, how was I seeing Mordecai when I had a desire to help him? And all the parents answer that you saw him as a person. And then he said, how was I seeing him at the end of all of my feelings and all the discussion that, you know, they talked about? And he said, well, almost as a caricature, an object. So then Yusuf tells a story of when he worked with his father, who was a carpenter, who talked about when walls weren't straight, they would put these shims in them to justify the straight wall. He said, when something is crooked, we need to make it straight. We call it justifying. The wall is crooked, so it needs to be justified. So when we choose not to follow our sense of desire that we have this self-betrayal. He was being crooked towards Mordecai. And then he wants to point out, like, how was I being crooked towards Mordecai? Like, that is what we need to be clear. Like, how was he being crooked? And it was interesting because he says, my view of him, my way of being and thinking about him was crooked. So this was an interesting quote. It says, it was precisely because I was seeing him as a person at the beginning of the story that I wanted to help him. But the moment I began to violate the basic call of his humanity upon me, I created within me a need that didn't exist the moment before. I needed to be justified for violating the truth I knew in that moment, that he was as human and legitimate as me. And then he also mentions that notice that all of my feelings of betrayal, my bitterness, my depression, my anger came after I betrayed myself. So he goes on to say, so notice, Yusuf continues, when I betray myself, others' faults become immediately inflated in my heart and mind. I begin to horribleize others. That is, I begin to make them out to be worse than they really are, and I do this because the worse they are, the more justified I feel. A needy man on the street suddenly represents a threat to my very peace and freedom. A person to help becomes an object to blame. So then there begins a discussion about, like, but what if you have been treated badly by people? And there have been wrongs unjustly against you, which of course Yusuf has felt as he had his like village attacked by Israelis, and he felt the same way. But the interesting that his colleague Avi, his father was also killed in a war against Arabs and Israelis or Jewish and Muslims, and they all have these conflicts to deal with. So what do you do? So he says, as painful as it is to receive contempt from another, it is more debilitating by far to be filled with contempt for another. In this too, I speak from painful experience. My own contempt for others is the most debilitating pain of all. For when I am in the middle of it, when I'm seeing resentfully and disdainfully, I condemn myself to living in a disdained, resented world. Okay, so then what happens is they look again at the choice diagram. So he had his choice to help Mordecai, or he had his desire, and then there was a choice. He could either honor that sense or betray that sense. And if he honored the sense, he continues to see Mordecai as a person. So he didn't begin to feel the sense of resentment or contempt when he had the sense to help him, only after he didn't help him. You see, he's trying to kind of see how we get ourselves into war by not listening to our sense or desire that we initially had. So having that self-betrayal. And then there's also a discussion between, like, did all this idea of his resentment and his bitterness of what had happened to him and what he had gone through and his family had to deal with, all those things kind of come up only after this experience happened. He wasn't even thinking about that as he was like, you know, trying to hustle people to different shops. And he says, it isn't that I saw Mordecai as a person because I wasn't dwelling on my hardships. Rather, it was that I wasn't dwelling on my hardships because I was seeing Mordecai as a person. I needed to dwell on my hardships only when I needed to be justified for treating Mordecai poorly. When I didn't need an excuse, I was free not to dwell on them. So it's just really fascinating how I think easy we get into justifying ourselves in that way. I mean, I see it all the time. And then I also see how when you have that feeling of justification and you kind of feel angry at someone, and then you either see them in person or you come across more information, and then you see them as a person and you realize you were wrong about so many things. It's just really, really fascinating how our minds want us to be justified in what we believe. So when we betray a sense or a feeling and a desire to, in this example, help this person or to see someone as a person, we kind of want to justify ourselves. I think about that when I see people begging for money on the streets. And in some ways, I want to help them and I don't know how best to help them. I guess I could give them a few dollars or give them a gift card, you know, because you worry, oh, I've heard that, yeah, if you just give them money, they might use it for alcohol or drugs. And it's just so funny how I just feel uncomfortable, especially like when you're coming off the freeway and someone has a sign and you're just stopped there and you can't not but look. And it's interesting the thought that Yusuf says, like, I looked away because I wanted to be appear or seen as being a good person. It's kind of overwhelming, like, especially as you pull up, you know, you're just not really thinking about it. And then you're faced with this idea of someone who is homeless and you see that's hard. And yet sometimes you're like, it seems so overwhelming. How do you even help that person? Does a dollar really help, or $5? So sometimes that's when I'm like, I don't even do anything. And I look away, or I don't really look at them because I don't know how to help them. It seems so hard. And then I find myself kind of justifying, like, oh, why don't they just go to work, or all these different things, and justifying myself for not knowing how to respond to that person when I see them as a person. Because it's so hard. So Yusuf goes on, he says, even though you may have dealt with some unfair, sad, hard things in your life, mistreatments, but we can't take away that from us. But it doesn't necessarily have to always determine how we carry on in the present. So he goes to say this quote, although nothing I can do in the present can take away the mistreatment of the past, the way I carry myself in the present determines how I carry forward the memories of those mistreatments. When I see others as objects, I dwell on the injustices I have suffered in order to justify myself, keeping my mistreatment and suffering alive with me. When I see others as people, on the other hand, then I free myself from the need for justification. I therefore free myself from the need to focus unduly on the worst that has been done to me. I am free to leave the worst behind me and to see not only the bad, but the mixed and the good in others as well. And he goes on to point out, a heart at war needs enemies to justify its warring. It needs enemies and mistreatment more than it wants peace. So that is this idea of, like, when we choose to go to war and then we continually have a need for war, if we've got to justify ourselves to keep thinking that we need to feel better. So this was interesting. This past week, I went and traveled to go see my son. He had a voice recital. And as we were coming back on the airplane, we had to switch flights. And we were in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. And we had to, like, get on a little train to go to the next terminal. And I was surprised. I thought we had more time, but we were like maybe had 20 minutes by the time that we got out of the airport till our plane was like leaving. So maybe we had 10 minutes before they were like closing the door. So we're like trying to hurry. So we get on the train and then I see this mom and she has two young boys. And I think she must have spoke Spanish just because of what happened afterwards. Like, anyway, we're all just kind of sitting there as the doors open. She comes in with her two boys. And I'm just kind of tired and kind of leaning and not really paying attention. And then all of a sudden, one of her boys walks off the train and the doors shut. And all of us are like screaming and they can't open the doors and the train goes. And it was like super traumatizing to watch that. Because I like, even now, like I think about how, oh my gosh, what would my kid do if he's like, I don't know, they were probably 4 and 6. They were pretty young. And what was so awesome to see on this train was that there were two people who like worked either at the airport or on the airline. And one of them spoke Spanish. And there was this woman and this man. And she's like, can you help her? And he's like, yeah, I have time to help her. And so they just got off on the next stop and then went to go back to find her son. And I was like, oh my gosh, are they going to be okay? I don't know if I want, I need to find out like how this story ends. Like I just saw them leave. And luckily she had someone to help her that spoke her language. But I just saw the mom's face as the doors closed and she realized her son was on the other side. And she just started crying and I was just so grateful to see that man come to her rescue to help her and, you know, speak the right language because we had to go catch our flight. I couldn't stop the doors, you know, like there was all these little things. So I just kept praying as I was like heading to my gate that that little boy would be okay and was so grateful to see, you know, people treating people as humans. Because in the airport, you're just so tired and you're like, oh, I've got to get to where I need to go. Do I miss my flight and help this person? You know, like there's so many things. So I was so grateful that she had the help she needed. And it's so funny how we get to our seats and I'm just like, oh, I'm a little traumatized. And Nate's like, it's okay. She was taken care of. And I was like, okay. And it's funny how like I thought about it now and I'm just like crying about it to you guys. Anyway, isn't it interesting this idea of learning to see how we get from seeing people as people and then how do we then justify ourselves when we begin to see them as caricatures and objects. We do this with so many different types of people. In politics, we do this. You know, even in stores with economics, we do this. Cities, we do this. You know, it's just really, maybe it's easier for us to go about the world sometimes because it can be overwhelming. There's so many people in this world. I mean, I was noticing that as we're like traveling and we're in like the Salt Lake area and we're driving out of Provo and the traffic is crazy. And I'm like, how many people live in this place? It's changed so much since, you know, I lived there 25 years ago or more. And just so many people that are out there. They're all humans, but sometimes we want to think of them as like NPCs. Is that what it's called? Non-player characters, NPCs. That's what my cute niece was like. They can't all be real people. They have to be NPCs, you know? Anyway, it's just a fascinating idea. And so next episode, I'm going to talk a little more about how we justify ourselves, finish up this section, how our heart goes to war, and then how we'll figure out how we can get it back to peace. And gosh, thank you guys for, I didn't realize I'd get so emotional about telling that story, but okay, so next week we'll be reading more of The Anatomy of Peace, finding out how we kind of justify ourselves a little bit more and then getting into few more episodes of how we kind of get ourselves back to hearts at peace. So have a good week, you guys. Thank you for listening. And I will talk to you next week. Okay, bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you have any questions, come by findingthefloor.com, where I will have show notes and links for anything I've mentioned today. Special thanks to Seth Johnson for creating and performing the theme music. Come back next week, and thanks for listening.